you will probably be able to tell about where I'm reading based on what I'm preaching. Now, not always, you can't always tell, because I'm reading elsewhere as well during the week as the Lord is moving in my life. But I did just read this passage through this week, and the Lord ministered to me. I never forget my discovery of this passage and how it liberated me at that time. Because I was one, I used to be a great fretter, quick to get frustrated about things and wanting to know, everything and wanting things to be happening the way that were acceptable to me. I was trained that way, I guess, and the Lord is, I'm sure He's not done with me yet, but He has done, if you've known me for any period of time at all, you know that He has done really a mighty work in this area in my life, and in large measure, the principle is expressed in one of the best places I know here in the 9th chapter of Numbers. Let me give you a little bit of background, get a setting for this. The children of Israel have been delivered out of their Egyptian slavery, which is typical of our being saved and delivered out of our sin, out of our own slavery to sin, our own Egypt, delivered into the glorious liberty of the children of God. And Israel had been delivered into the liberty of the glorious family of God, and He had made them some promises, among which was this tremendous promise that they were going to go to a land, inherit a land that was flowing with milk and honey. It was a land in which the inhabitants were going to be driven out. He was going to give them their vineyards, their houses, and so on and so forth. And it was this promise primarily that was driving Israel in their wilderness wanderings. Now, at this point, they haven't really been wandering. They've just entered the wilderness. They've been traveling for some time. But this is before they were sentenced to 40 years of wandering. They are on the way to the promised land, and they're in a hurry to get there. They want to get there, and they want to appropriate what God has promised them, as well you would or I would. Anybody would rather live in a place flowing with milk and honey than they would in a wilderness populated by scorpions and snakes. The fact of the matter, Steve, is you're living in a place populated by scorpions and snakes, as we all are. And we get our little joys here and there, but let's face it, this world is not friendly to us. It rejected our Savior. The systems of this world hung Him on a cross and killed Him, thinking to put an end. Why should we expect it to be any more friendly to us? It isn't. And so there's something in us that wants to move forward, and we want to move into what we consider to be the will of God. We can almost hear Paul, as the stones were flying, "Oh God, I'm not enjoying these stones. I want to get in Your will." He was in the will of God. The stones were part of the will. Aren't you glad Paul lived the life he lived when you read his letters? Because isn't it an encouragement to you as it is to me to know that Paul prayed 3 times that these problems should stop? God said, "My grace is sufficient for you." Aren't you glad those verses are in 1st and 2nd Corinthians chapter 12? I'm glad they're there. And so it's not uncommon for us all to want to move into what we consider to be, when we say we want to be in the will of God, what we're really saying is we want to be in the blessing of God. If the Scripture is true, that the steps of good men are ordered by the Lord, then even when the stones are flying, we're in the will of God. That'd be a real good place for somebody to say, "Preach it, Pastor." Who would have said to Jesus hanging on the cross, "You're not in the will of God"? That hurts, doesn't it? See, you're not in the will of God. Who would have said to Paul when he was in the Philippian jail, you're not in the will of God? You know, those jails didn't have color television. They didn't have cafeterias, all that stuff. These are pretty terrible places. In the will of God. So just because God does not seem to be moving in your life in blessing does not mean that you're not in the will of God. We are in the will of God when we are walking by faith. How do you walk by faith? Lord, I trust you to be operating in my life today. Lord, I trust you to be moving in my circumstances today. Lord, I trust you that everything that happens to me today is working together for my good. That's where the will of God is. Now, in this particular passage, the children of Israel were in the will of God, but they were also in a very unfriendly wilderness. They were in a hurry to get out of there. What had they found thus far? They found no water. They found no food. They found no friendly people. They found strife and problems with their leaders, strife and problems with each other. They had out here this wonderful promise, but so far, they weren't very happy with circumstances the way they were. Now, they did have the presence of God with them. And the children of Israel experienced the presence of God this way. They experienced it with a cloud by day, a pillar of cloud, and a pillar of fire at night. And when they saw the pillar of cloud, they saw the pillar of fire. Oh, cool. Well, oh, this is, you know, I just almost got snake bit, but at least God's still with me. And so it is with us. I can remember one of the most devastating times of my life was a time of great testing, and I won't bore you with the details of that, but emotionally, I felt like God had departed from me. My emotions were telling me, where are you? But inside my heart of hearts, I knew he was with me. Because he had promised me, I'll never leave you and I'll never forsake you. And so my feelings were screaming that I long for your presence. Where are you? But inside my heart of hearts was, I know that you are there. It seems to me that we have a better covenant than the children of Israel did. I mean, they had to actually go outside the tent and check and see if the pillar of fire cloud was still there. You know, I can figure it out in the morning before I open my eyes. Because he's inside me. And he's inside you. His presence. Now, in this particular case, this is simply a statement of fact concerning an historical series of events. It begins in the 15th verse of Numbers 9. And it says, and on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, that is the day that the tabernacle in which God was going to dwell above the mercy seat, the day that that was built and set up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony, and at even, or at evening, there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until the morning. So here you've got the cloud in the daytime, and then the fire at night. So it was always. In other words, the presence of God was always there, never departed. The cloud covered it by day, and the appearance of fire by night. That's the way it is with us. Day or night, God is with us all the time. Always. And when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord they pitched. Now, here's the situation. They're in a wilderness. They're on their way to a place of wonderful blessing for God, but they don't know how to get there. See, that's your question this morning. How do I get there? You don't know. I don't know. I look at our church, and I don't know. I said to you last week at our congregational meeting, I don't know. I want to know, but I don't know. So what do I do? What do we do? What do you do as a Christian? What do you do as an individual Christian or as a family or as a church family? What do? We watch the cloud. Not a bad answer. The children of Israel, what they did, what did they do? They watched the cloud. When they got up in the morning, they checked the tabernacle to see if the cloud was on it. If the cloud was on it, Azariah said, Rebekah, fix breakfast. We're going to stay here today. But if the cloud was moving, he says, Rebekah, pack up the pots. We're leaving. We're moving. She said, where are we going? I don't know. We're going to follow the cloud. Well, where are we going to camp tonight? How long are we going to be trying? I don't know. When the cloud stops, we stop. Now, that's the way they lived. They got up in the morning. They checked the cloud. If the cloud was still on the tabernacle, they knew that they were going to stay there that day. If the cloud moved, they moved with it. They followed the presence of God. Now, that is a daily decision. Every day, they check the cloud. What's on today, Lord? And so, Moses records here, at the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord, they pitched. No, they pitched their tents. So where the cloud stopped, they said, oh, okay, here's a good place to camp. The cloud stops here. And so they pitched their tents there and they stayed. Now, what if the cloud didn't move? What if it didn't move for days? I mean, you're on your way to a land of promise. You've just left a place of great slavery. You're right now in a miserable circumstance. It's cold at night. It's hot in the daytime. You need a miracle to get water. You need a miracle to get food. The people are all unhappy around you because of it. Let's get on with it. But what do you do if God is not moving, if the cloud doesn't move? That's exactly what you do, son. This isn't rocket science. No. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they what? They rested in their tents. Underline the word rested. Underline that word rested. They just decided that they didn't want to get out ahead of God. Who would want to be in a wilderness and say, well, okay, God, his cloud's not moving today, but I'm in a hurry. I think I know where to go. And I'm heading out. And a lot of Christians do that. Many Christians do that. And I can name you from this pulpit today any number whose names you know who did precisely that and rue it today. As long as the cloud abode on the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. They just stayed in the tent. And stayed and camped there. The idea here is that they did not move the camp and they rested. Well, what happens if the cloud doesn't move for days or weeks or months or years? And when the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle, many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. Now, notice here God's notice the word that is used in 18, at the commandment of the Lord, the children journeyed. And notice how he commanded them. He commanded them by his presence. By his personal presence. That was his commandment. So it was, verse 20, when the cloud was a few days on the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in the tents, and according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from even till morning, and the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. And so all they did, they just checked the cloud. When it was time to sleep, they slept. When it was time to rest, they rested. They just kept their eyes on the cloud. They stayed in close contact with him, is the idea here. They maintained a relationship with the presence of God. This is the most important thing I think that any Christian can do. And that is maintaining a close, personal relationship, intimate relationship with God so that when he moves, we move with him. Now, verse 22 is significant. It says, and whether it were 2 days or a month or a year that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon, the children of Israel abode in their tents and journeyed not, and when it was taken up, they journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in the tents, and at the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed, and they kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now notice that God can command the rest. You see, journeying is a commandment of God, and so is resting. And Steve, you were sharing this morning from Hebrews chapter 4. I think we'll go over there just a moment and take a look at that. This ties into what we're talking about this morning. Hebrews chapter 4 and chapter 3 and 4 actually flow together. Chapter 4 begins in Hebrews, "Let us therefore fear," or let us have a reverential fear of God, "lest a promise being left us of entering into His rest, any of you should seem to come short of it." So let's be careful that we don't get messed up here, because God has given us a promise of rest. Verse 3, "For we which have believed do enter into rest." Verse 4, "For He spake in a certain day of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all His works." And verse 5, "And in this place again, if they shall enter into My rest," inferring that rest is His plan for us. "Seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief." That's the only reason why we do not enter in. Again, this is a passage from the Psalms. Verse number 9, "There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God. For he that has entered into his rest, he also hath ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor therefore to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief." This is where I am personally with regard to our church. And I want our church to be moving forward and moving into what I know God can do, and what I know God wants to do, and what I know God has done. I think if I had not experienced some of the things that I have experienced in my life and in the life of our church, it would be less frustrating for me. But there is a certain amount of frustration, a significant amount of frustration at times. When week after week goes by, month after month goes by, now year after year goes by, and the things that I believe ought to be happening aren't. And I said, "What's going on here?" I ask myself, "Has the cloud moved?" And I have to say, "No, the cloud hasn't moved. I'm here till the cloud moves." Now, the cloud moves, you ought to get your traveling shoes on, because I'm going with the cloud. I think you will too. But if the cloud is not moving, we have two choices. When the cloud's moving, we have two choices, and that is we can get up and go with it, or we can stay where we are and the cloud leaves us behind. But if the cloud is not, and that's not a difficult choice to make, I think, for most of us, but if the cloud is not moving, then we have a tough choice. Or at least that's the tough one for me. The cloud is not moving, the choices are these. Either I can make a decision to just rest. See, resting is an act of faith. Do you understand that resting is not slothfulness? Let me say that again. Resting in God is not slothfulness. It's an active expression of faith to rest. And so we can either choose to rest, because after all, He's the king. We're not the king. We just take orders. We just take direction. We just do what He shows us to do and tell it. We don't tell Him what to do. We shouldn't, at least. So we can either rest, or we can decide, "I don't really like it like this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do something different. I'm going to get some people together, and we're going to get our camels together, and we're going to pack up the pots, and we're going. If God won't come, that's fine. We're going anyway." And we don't realize that's what we're saying, but that's what we are saying. Does that make sense to you? Now, for me, I said to you last week, if I was age 30, with all deference to those of you who are age 30, this doesn't mean to throw off anything on you, but if I was at age 30, I know myself at age 30, I'd be moving. God or no God. I mean, that, because that was just me. Wasn't it, Lois? But at this age, I've learned some things. And I've grown in some areas. And while I may not like it anymore, I understand how it's supposed to work. And the way it's supposed to work is that when the cloud moves, we move. When the cloud stays still, we stay still. And what do? While we stay still, we rest. In the last, I don't know whether it was when I was reading through this passage or something, I was thinking about what our church has been through over the last, not just the last couple of years, but what it's been through over the last number of years in dealing with the, just dealing with the constant discord and dealing with the constant striving and contentions and, you know, the proverb, we've been studying the Proverbs on Wednesday night, and one of the Proverbs, and wives, forgive me here, I'm going to use this as an example, this comes to mind, and the subject is not about wives, but I'm just going to use the Scripture to make the point. One of the Scriptures we read this past Wednesday night is that the contentions, the acts of a contentious woman are like a continual dropping. Like Chinese water torture. You know what that is? You know what it's like to have a leaky faucet? You're trying to sleep and your faucet is dripping? That's what continual contentions are like. The proverb says that it's better to live on a rooftop in a corner than to live in a great big beautiful house with a contentious woman. Now, churches are like that too. It's better to live in a storefront church with a few people than it is in a great big bustling ministry when everybody is biting and devouring each other. The principle is the same. Contention and discord and strife is a destructive, and much of the destruction that it does is not generally noticed at the moment. And one of the things that I have noted in the time, these recent months and last year and a half or so, is how free we are from this constant bickering and constant discord and constant contention and constant this isn't right and that isn't right and I'm not happy about this and I'm not happy about that and this problem and this difficulty and just one thing after and just continual fomenting. It's like going to the beach right after a hurricane. You know what the water is like? It's all roiled and it's all full of twigs and seaweed and mud and sand all stirred up and in large measure, not that there weren't some good times too, and I wouldn't want to create that picture. But this is like a calm sea. Compared to what it used to be like in dealing with all of these various issues. And so I, for one, am really grateful for rest, and I realize that that during those times we had very little rest. Very little rest. Really rest in the spirit, because we're always dealing with some issue. I can't tell you how many nights I laid there at night and could not sleep, just all night long. I mean, just could not sleep. Because of this circumstance or that circumstance or what we had to do with this or how we were going to handle this or how we're going to deal with this and not hurt somebody and so on, how we're going to please this group or whatever, what have you. It was constant. And carrying the concerns of other people in our church who were being hurt by some of these things, that were caught up in them. And, you know, you carry those things as a pastor or as a father. You carry them for your children, for your family. And so... You know, in my personal circumstances, I waver, you know, between, boy, I'm enjoying this rest, to I get a little like Steve, it was this morning, when he says, oh, I wish God would move. I wish he would move in my life, and I wish he would show me what it is he wants done and where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing and so on. And I do. I go this way. I wish I didn't. But when I go this way, I don't go as far either direction as I used to. You know, what happens is, it used to be, I don't know if that happens this way in your life, It's the swings are less extreme as we mature. We still swing, but we don't swing from here to here to here to here. My emotional highs are not as high, but my emotional lows are not as low. It's more, I believe that's the fruit of patience being produced. It's constancy. It's always being the same. It's that steadfastness in bad circumstances or good. So for each of us, I believe there's a lesson in this passage today. There remaineth therefore, Hebrews 4:9, a rest to the people of God. And so he that has entered into the rest of God has ceased from his own works and from his own struggles. And so we're going to struggle with something either individually or personally, or we're going to struggle with something as a church. Let's struggle to enter into the rest of God. And if it's for a day, fine, it's for a day. If it's for a month, then it's fine, it's for a month. I believe there's a time coming when we will long for this rest again. I sense it in my own heart that there's a time coming that I wish I was back here. And so we need to enjoy it while we have it and learn to appreciate the fact that God is taking care of us moment by moment, day by day, week by week, and month by month. How many of us believe that the steps of God's men, good men, righteous men and women, are ordered by the Lord? How many of us really believe that? See, we believe that. Then we need to walk in that. God knows what He has in mind for us tomorrow, and the thing for us to do is not to figure it all out so that we can go do it, but it is simply to walk with Him and surrender to Him so that we are not resisting Him when He tries to move us. See, if I take what can I find here that I can illustrate this principle with? Daniel, would you stand up here with me, please, son? I want you to just to turn around here and face the congregation with me, okay? Just look at these nice people. Let them look at you. Now, let's assume here that Daniel wants to go over to the piano. He wants to walk over to the piano. But I want him to go over here to the overhead projector. Okay? Now, Daniel, you do what you want. Now, go over here to the piano. I want you to go to the piano as hard as you can. I mean, you just really get to the piano. Come on. Get to the piano. Okay, stop. Stop. Now, how close did we really get to Daniel having the will of God in his life? He didn't move one step towards that projector, did he? Because hard as I pulled against him, he was fighting me. Now, is there anything wrong with going to the piano? Is that sinful or wicked? There's nothing wrong with that. The only thing that's wrong with that is it inhibits the Lord from putting us where He wants us to be. Okay? Now, Daniel, I'm not finished with you yet, son. He says, yes, you are. Okay, now, Daniel, you don't want to go anywhere now, okay? You just want to go where I want you to go, right? Yes. Yes is the proper answer. No, not that one again. Not that one again. Okay, now I just want you to just yield to me. Just surrender to me. Just yield to me. Just do whatever I prompt you to do, okay? No way? You're not going to do that? Do I have to get somebody else to help me here? Are you going to help me? Okay, see, there's us. There's us. That's us. That is us. Now, we would not admit it any more than Daniel would, but that's us. Daniel doesn't know what a good example he is this morning to my message. Now, I'm going to ask Daniel's mama to come up here. Okay, now you turn around. Okay? Now, you don't have any mind of your own here, do you? Or any will of your own? You don't particularly want to go to the piano or anything? Or do you still have a little Daniel in you? Huh? You want to do whatever I want you to do, don't you? Yeah. See how easy that was? But suppose I change my mind when I get here. See how easy? Now, if I were the Lord, who would I rather be dealing with today? Daniel or his mama? See? And that's really the choice that we're making. That's the choice we're making. Now, when we are young, like Daniel, I say, no way, man, I would do my own thing. So that's the way we are as young Christians. Okay? That's why God puts children in families with parents. With parents who are big enough and powerful enough to get that under control. So we control them so that they can learn how to control themselves. And that's the way God's working with us. As we grow older and as we mature in the Lord, we ought to become more yielded. More yielded. So if I say to Jeanette, would you go over and turn on the overhead projector? Now, see, if I said to Daniel, he wouldn't do it. Because he's got his own mind. But if I said to Jeanette, would you turn on the overhead projector? She'd be right over there and turn that thing on. I say, okay, now just sit down, just take it easy for a while. You know what Jeanette would do? She'd go sit down, take it easy for a while. And then if I wanted her to go over to the piano and turn some music, she'd be there ready and waiting. Now let's say it's Jeanette, would you go to the piano and turn the music for the pianist? She'd be right there. Because she's resting and she's available to me. And she'd be doing exactly what I want to do. Now if I had to do it with the other character this morning, I'd have to chase him around the building. See, I'd have to go find him. And then after I found him, I'd have to force him. So it is important for us to learn how to rest. It's important for us to learn how to walk in his rest and how to live.